All right, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to listeners. You are tuned to Radio Islam International. It's 12 minutes past 7 o'clock. And we continue, inshallah, with the Rabita Afkar program, the car program on Radio Islam International. Number to call for the program is 011-854-1548. And the SMS numbers are 48855. And alternately, 082-580-8070. It's 082-580-8070-48855. We're waiting for the SMSs and the calls. We're also going to be having a quiz later on in the program, inshallah, and the person who answers the two questions correctly will win a lovely prize tonight, sponsored by MYM Motors. All right, we'd like to welcome Adil on the program. Adil Mia, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to my brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Maulana, and to all our listeners. Welcome back to our program. Inshallah, you had the whole week to get your questions ready, all your motoring troubles and all your motoring needs and requirements. Inshallah, we are here to answer all your questions.
Ameen. Jazakum Allah. Allah reward you for your time as well. Adil, a question coming through with regards to any airbag recalls regarding Mercedes-Benz. You're quite well acquainted with Mercedes-Benz. Were there any Mercedes-Benz airbag recalls in the last 2 years?
No, Mossad. As far as in our country, I had no report of Mercedes-Benz airbags being recalled, but I previously, when Mercedes-Benz just launched the airbags in America, they had an issue with the airbag. Actually, it wasn't an airbag recall, but it was an issue with a little child being strapped up in the seat. And that's, if you look at all Mercedes-Benz vehicles, I'll just tell you quickly the story, and then maybe it can be also a precaution and a safety tip for all our listeners out there. That is, whenever you put a child into the seat in front or in the back, make sure if they're small enough to put them in a car chair or a booster chair, and if they're adult enough to set them up for the safety belt. What happened there was a child was put into the front seat and was not buckled up, and unfortunately the accident took place, and the airbag actually killed the child.
Not the
crash or anything, and then they actually sued Mercedes-Benz, and they won the case, the people who sued Mercedes-Benz. So if you look at all Mercedes-Benz cars, when you blow down the sun visor, it clearly illustrates that the safety belt has to be worn for the airbag to work properly. But in the last 2 years in our country, I had no, I cannot recall an airbag failure on any Mercedes cars or a recall on them.
Okay. All right. Jazakumallah. I'll get question number two coming through with regards to the air temperature sensor. How does the air temperature sensor work?
So, most of the air temperature sensor is basically, there's two in a motor vehicle. In most motor vehicles, there are two air temperature sensors. The one air temperature sensor is to measure the amount of air that is being produced to go into the engine, so it can, like last week we spoke about all the sensors, so this is one of the sensors that also fitted to the modern day engine. So basically the air temperature sensor measures the air temperature outside, which internally feeds it to the engine control unit to tell you how hot the air is outside, because for hotter air you need the less air intake, and for cold air, because of the air being thicker, you need more air intake. So that basically sends a message to the ECU to give you the different fuel supply to the injectors with warmer air and colder air.
All right, Jazakumullah. We take it further, Adil.
The other air temperature sensor is actually the outside ambient air temperature sensor, which normally being displayed in your motor vehicles on the cluster, and you need to see how hot or cold is it outside. And I think nowadays we can see it's sweltering over 30, 32 degrees. It's really been hot out there. And inshallah, we pray for the rain. Allah send His mercy with the rain also, inshallah.
Ameen, ameen. Allahumma sajban nafi'a. Ameen. Regarding this, we find that also, Adil, SMS is coming around that the weather services also will issue an alert this evening of an impending heat wave which will affect the country between Saturday, 10 October, to around Thursday next week. Allahu alam, but they say that the temperatures are expected to go beyond 45 degrees Celsius. So we've got to look after our kids as well.
Yeah.
You know, wear protective clothing, sunscreens. Are we still going fishing, Adil?
I think we need to. I don't know, but I think we can go for it.
Okay.
You say wear the sunscreen, wear our heads, and maybe just be in there in the morning and in the evening, and during the middle of the day, be in the shade.
Gee, does that come a lot? Adil, the question coming through, let's take this one. A reminder, inshallah, to our listeners, number to call for the program, 011-854-1548. SMS numbers are 48855, and also alternately 082-580-8070. Adil, the question coming through, it states, I have oil and water mixing in my Mercedes-Benz C240 the vehicle never overheated. What could cause the cause, and how can it be repaired?
See, Mossab, that is a common problem, especially on the C240, the V6 engines, where you have a oil cooler. Basically, two oil coolers are fitted to those vehicles. The first one is to cool the engine oil, and the other one is to cool the gearbox, the transmission oil. So basically, even with the car not overheating, that oil cooler can fail. So basically, oil pressure always is higher compared to water pressure, and oil will always try to get in quicker where water will not get in. So basically, what happens is if that oil cooler fails, the oil will go through the water passage and go up to the water reservoir bottle. That's where you will see the oil. So basically, the simple solution to that one is to check the oil cooler. It can be removed and pressure tested, and check if it is any leaks, and then should be replaced, and then the cooling system thoroughly flushed, and then new coolant and water fitted again. The other one for the transmission oil cooler, that one is built into the radiator. So if that one is damaged, unfortunately the radiator has to be replaced, because there isn't really any repair to the oil cooler, because it comes built into the radiator. That one will be more of a reddish pinkish color. The latter one will be more of a muddish color, like a yellowish color, because the oil is normally black and the transmission oil is normally red, so it will cause you a pinkish color, and the other one will be a more yellowish color. So those are the two distinctive colors you'll get when the oil and water mixes. The other main culprit is the car didn't overheat, but in this instance, there could be damage done to the cylinder gasket, and that can also cause the oil and water to mix. That is the main culprit on most cars. But eventually, if that is the problem, the car will start eventually overheating. But those are the three main factors that should be checked.
Lovely. Adil, what is the correct procedure for jump-starting a dead battery?
So the correct procedure is, there's so many new technologies out there today.
Because I just want to ask you, Adil, because I remember a few days ago I was boosting the battery. I initially started with the negative, putting the negative to negative, thereafter positive to positive.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman said they know the correct procedure is you've got to put the positives first to the positive and the negative to the negatives. I don't know. You tell us.
The procedure is not really important. I mean, but to put the positive to the positive first and the negative to the negative first, the correct way is like how you done it. I don't know. That's how we always do it: the negative to the negative first, and then the positive to positive.
Okay.
There's so many technologies out there that can actually boost out your car. I mean, the olden day what we used to use is the booster cables where you boost it from one car to the other car. That can be a bit tricky because you can cause a polarity and cause some serious damage to the car. So that should be avoided at all times, even if you're doing it for the first time or you're trying to do it, because a mistake can happen. I've seen mechanics cause damage to the vehicle as far as that is concerned. So basically, if you're going to boost out the car from a booster cable, make sure always you have the positive to the positive. That's more important. That means from the positive from the booster battery and the positive to the dead battery. That's always got that right. And then you put the negative to negative. Don't put it the other way around. That's when you're going to cause all the problems and all the trouble will take place.
Sure.
Today in modern technology, there's so many units out there. Actually, there's one on the market right now. It's called a mini jump starter. It's a little small battery pack, size of your mobile phone.
I heard about it last night in Fakarilji.
And it's you can keep it in your pocket or you can keep it in your boot. It's the size of a mobile phone and it comes in different sizes.
Yeah.
So basically the smallest one is about 6,000 milliamps an hour that will actually start your car, and it can even charge your mobile phone and charge your laptop.
I heard about it, and in fact the selling price of it is quite, it's not bad, it's about 700 rand, isn't it?
Yeah, the cheapest one that you can get on the market is, the smallest one starts off from 400 rand. So basically you keep one of those handy things in your boot, and whenever you have a problem, you just pull it out of the boot, you go to your car in front, you connect them positive to the positive, the negative to the negative, and this one you can't damage because it's got a little safety on the, if you cause polarity, it will switch off. It won't let you do any harm to the battery or to the engine.
And how long does it last for, Dil?
Basically, that one there can last for about, in your boot of your car, you can keep it from 3 to 5 months, and then you have to remove it and recharge it. But if you keep it in your boot, every time you use it, it allows you 10 starts to a car, It allows you to start your mobile phone, charge your mobile phone about 3 times and your laptop about 2 times.
Mm.
It's a really handy product to have. So basically, if you're going to buy a jumper cable, which normally costs a good one, costs about over 400 then.
Yeah, easy.
You can buy the cheaper ones for 100 then, which don't even last and don't even do the job. And then a couple hundred men more, you can keep one of these mini jump starters or mini booster packs in your boot, and then you're away, and you don't have any hassle. And even you can assist other motorists out there also. And battery problems is a huge problem, not in the summertime much, but in the wintertime can become frustrating. You know, now and then you go out to the mall or you go out and the youngsters are left in the car and they put all the other things on in the car. By the time you come back to your car, the car doesn't start because they left the radio on, and by mistake they put the headlights on and the interior lights on, and this drains the battery quickly. So it can be any product, Monsaf. There are quite a few out there, and then just remember to get a good one, and it can save you a lot of time and money as well.
Jazakumullah then. Adil question coming through is, how popular are loaded brake calipers? Can you explain to us what is loaded brake calipers?
Loaded brake calipers?
Gee, SMS question, I don't understand this.
Loaded or maybe floating brake calipers?
Possible, Adil.
Okay, basically a brake caliper is the unit that fits onto the brake disc of a motor vehicle where the pads fit into. So basically the caliper is where you fit the brake pad into. And the caliper is the unit where the brake fluid comes into, and you have two pistons. So two pistons maybe is referred to, that would be the loaded caliper. That means you'll have two pistons on either side. The floating caliper is you'll have one piston on one side and the floating unit on the other side. So you'll have no piston on the other side. So basically the piston will push the brake pad onto the disc, and the floating side will squeeze it from the other side. The loaded one is more effective because you'll have two pistons from either side. So basically the caliper is, in a short, simple explanation, the caliper is which houses the brake pad, which internally uses to brake the disc on the braking system.
Okay, JazakAllah. Number to call for the quiz, for the car program, 011-854-1548, and the SMS numbers again, it's 488-55, 488-55, waiting for the SMSs as well as the calls. Adil, regarding, you know, say for instance you want to buy a car, now you need to check the engine compression. The engine compression doesn't seem too good. What's the best way to check whether the car has sufficient engine compression?
Jim, also, that's a very good idea when buying a motor vehicle, is to check the engine compression. And the easiest way, I'll teach your listeners to check it quickly when buying a car, if you don't have a proper engine compression tester, is you start the car and you pull the dipstick out. Or even if you loosen the oil cap a bit and you just remove it slightly, sometimes with some engines, if you remove the oil cap, some oil can come out through the feeder holes to fill in the oil.
Yeah.
And if you see vapor or smoke coming out from any of those two holes, so basically the dipstick or the oil filler cap hole, don't touch the vehicle.
Then you will see oil coming out.
You know, the oil.
I mean, sorry, the vapor.
I'm talking about like little white vapor, like little white smoke, in other words.
White smoke, yeah.
Then you don't touch it because it's got blow-by. So whatever is happening in the engine is going past the rings and it's throwing it back up. That's the quickest test to do. And basically, inspect the cap also, you know, the oil cap and the dipstick. When you take the dipstick out, inspect how clean the oil is or how dirty it is. And the oil cap, turn it upside down and look at how the cap looks. Is there any yellowish substance on it or reddish substance? Or is there any signs of thick grime on it? Or sludge, in other words. So if you look at those two things, it's the easiest way to determine it. The more technical way is you remove the spark plugs and you carry out the compression test, which only a technician can do, or the AA can even do it for you. That will be different people at different prices charge you. That's 100% of your doing. If your compression is good on that one, you can go for the car if there's any sign of...
So how did they do it, Adil? How do they do it?
They basically remove the spark plugs and you have a compression tester.
Oh.
So basically it's a little pressurized unit that you put into the cylinder spark plug hole. And when you crank the engine, the pressure from the cylinder will go into a pressurized unit and push a lever in there with a chart on it. So as far as the lever goes, it will push the lever from 0% up to 15%. So basically from 9 to out to 15, the engine is good. Below that, the engine is starting to wear. So immediately you pick up how good the engine is. But it's a advisable test to do when buying a vehicle, especially a vehicle with high mileage.
Okay, JazakAllah. All right, Adil, maybe pose the questions for the quiz tonight, sponsored generously by MYM Motors.
Jim, most of the two questions we have for tonight.
Okay.
Maybe the first one will be a bit tricky. The first one will be easy if you're out there and you know the the motor industry and you know the motor history of motor vehicles. So the first question would be is, which motor vehicle turns 40 this year?
Okay, interesting question.
Right, which motor vehicle turns 40 this year? The second one is, if you did listen to our show in the past...
Let's first get the answer to the first one, Adil.
Okay,
inshallah.
Okay.
All right, dear listeners, like Brother Adil saying that which vehicle turns 40 this year? Which vehicle turns 40 this year? Not yourself, we're talking about the car. Which vehicle turns 40 this year? Give us a call on the number. Yes, inshallah, once you pose this question, we're going to ask you the second question. Number to call for the quiz, it's 011-854-1548, 011-854-1548. Lovely prices we're giving away tonight, inshallah, sponsored by MYM Motors. Are there a question coming through regarding Mercedes-Benz? This time it is, it says by Mercedes-Benz 2007C315. It does not start. I've checked the battery and the starter, but what else can I check?
Jim, also on this vehicle, basically from the 2007 model onwards, better known to people as the W204 series, which was launched in 2007 and stopped production in 2013 and 2014, and then the new W205 was launched. Basically, the common problem in these cars, if the brother did check the starter and the battery, is the electronic steering locks which failed on this car. So basically what happens, you insert the key into the ignition, you turn the key on, everything, the key turns everything, but nothing happens. No instrument cluster lights come on, the car looks like the battery is dead. So the thing is to do a diagnostic test, and if that occurs, normally 99% of the time it's the electronic steering lock which fails on that car. It has a little motor in the steering lock, so basically when you insert the key, you hear that sound like a clattering sound that releases something. So that releases the lock and then starts your car. So basically what happens with this is these little motors fail and it doesn't allow you to unlock the steering. So sometimes it gets locked in the lock position or in the unlock position.
So
the main, the thing you'll have to change there is the electronic steering lock will have to be changed and it recoded, because you can't even go and buy a second one. It has to be one from Mercedes or one that can be repaired and then recoded to the vehicle. So the prevention for that, for all our listeners who have these serious Mercedes-Benz cars, my experience is that when parking the vehicle, make sure you always park the vehicle with the steering in a straight ahead position. Normally we have a bad habit when we park in a car, the direction we park the car in. So for example, if you go in left into a parking bay, when you pull into the parking bay, you leave the steering how it is and the wheels are facing in the left direction and you unlock the car or you unlock the steering and you lock the car. That is a bad practice. So what I'm saying is when you're pulling into the parking bay, and you straighten out the vehicle, so basically you straighten out the steering, so you put it in a straight ahead position. So basically the wheels and the steering are in a straight ahead position, and then you release the key and then lock the car. That will prevent the steering lock from giving you a problem.
Okay, Jazakumullah. 7:32 p.m., a call on the line, line number one, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah
wa barakatuh. Gee, and how are you?
Alhamdulillah.
MashaAllah, gee. What's your question? Are you calling for the quiz?
The VW Passat.
Sorry?
The VW Passat.
The Passat, not the Passat, my brother. It's not the Passat, it is. Which vehicle turns 40 this year? It's not the Passat, okay?
Gee.
But Jazakallah for trying, Jazakallah for trying. Good boy. Okay, my brother, where are you calling from? Are you calling from Minan, mashallah? Make dua fast, okay, my brother?
Sure.
Try again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Which vehicle turns 40 this year? Gee, which vehicle turns 40 this year? Give us a call on 011-854-1548. The quiz sponsored by MYM Motors. Adil, question coming through here is, do you have another caller? Gee, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Hello.
Gee, my brother, how are you?
Alaikum
salam, gee.
Alhamdulillah, I just want to find out, Mona, a trade price for a vehicle. Do you do that still?
What vehicle is it? I don't really have the book, but is it the older vehicles or the new ones?
It's an older vehicle, Mona.
Yeah, okay, inshallah. What's it?
It's a 2004 Jetta, it's a Golf 1.9 TDI.
Yeah.
It's done 193,000 Ks.
You want to buy or are you selling?
I want to buy, Mona.
You want to buy?
Gee.
Manual or automatic?
It's a manual, Jay.
Manual.
Is it absolutely in good condition, neat, very neat, but the tires are gone.
Okay, may I ask what they're looking for?
They're looking for 69, Morana.
69. Yeah, that is about the prices for those cars, Mosaf.
Cheryl?
That is the prices for those cars. They are around that price.
Around the price, but cheaper as well, Jay.
Yeah, but cheaper as well. But the main thing is the mileage. The mileage you said was 193.
193,
Jay. The mileage is a bit high.
Jay.
Does it have a full service history?
I'm not sure of the history.
You see, very important, especially diesel cars, when you purchase in diesel cars, the most important thing when purchasing the diesel car with that mileage, the service history is very important, number one.
Jay.
Number two, make sure you have a spare key for the car.
Jay.
It's also very important. And then make sure when you're purchasing the car, it hasn't been involved in any accident.
No, according to what I see, I don't think it's involved in an accident.
Okay. So another common problem on those cars is make sure that the turbo was changed or wasn't changed. Because if the turbo wasn't changed, that's bound to give you trouble.
Is it?
Yeah.
So turbo is how much about, Morana?
Turbo, you can pick up at different prices. Depends if they can... It starts off from about 3.5 can go up to about 10,000 on those cars.
But do you advise it because the kilos are high, Morana?
The kilos are but high. So, you know, at those kilos, the problem starts.
Won't they keep it to at 60, Uncle? Can you try at 60?
I think, you know what, I was thinking of more in the range of 55 because I'll need tires on that car as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you're offering 55, is good.
Yeah, I think that would be a fair price.
See.
But do you advise it because, I mean, the kilos are high and I think the overall on a diesel engine is very high.
But I think it's a 2004 model, it's about 10 years old.
See. Most of you can buy today the 2004-2005 Mercedes-Benz C-Class.
Yeah.
Ranging from that price, from 69 to 80,000.
Yeah.
That's a better option.
And it's a better option because the mileages will be about the same, 180,000-190,000.
Yeah.
And the car's more spacious and it's a more comfortable car to buy. I think you'd rather spend your money wisely that way if you're going to spend so much on the Golf.
Gee. But I see I'm a single man, you see.
Yeah.
Gee. Okay.
Yeah, then bismillah, you know, you offer him 55, I think 55 is a fair price.
55 is a good price.
And considering the mileage, I think maybe he can...
Yeah, I think 69 is too high, man.
No, 69 is a bit high.
All right, my brother. Jazakallah. Speak to them to drop the price.
Jee, inshallah.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah.
All the best to us, for us, inshallah.
Inshallah, thank
you. Amen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. 7:36 p.m. Another caller. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jee, my brother.
I'm phoning for the quiz.
Yeah. Let's see.
This is the BMW 3 Series.
The BMW 3 Series. Gee, it is the BMW 3 Series. MashaAllah. Which vehicle turns 40 this year? Like you say, my brother, the BMW 3 Series. Aril, is it correct?
You're 100% correct. 40, big one for the BMW 3 Series. Mosaf, car first launched in 1975. Over 14 million units sold in 130 markets around the world.
Sure.
So staggering, quarter of the sales of this motor vehicle was the whole BMW sales. So quarter of all BMW sales was the 3 Series. Very popular car in our country, very much loved by all our people, and especially the youngsters.
Yeah.
And 3 Super Hauler. And see, Mosaf, that is the correct answer, 100%.
Jazakallah, Mosaf, the lovely cars also. All right, you haven't won the prizes yet. Gee, are you ready for the second question?
Gee.
Then you can book your ticket, okay? Here's a question, my brother. We're going to give you a few seconds to answer. Who developed the first four-stroke engine? Who developed the first four-stroke engine? It was not Jan van Riebeeck. Not Paul Kruger either. Gee, who's the, what's the answer? Who developed the first four-stroke engine, my brother?
Henry Ford.
Henry Ford. No, he made the car. No.
He made the car.
Okay. What's Ritter?
Who is it?
Nicholas Otto.
Yes, what a guy.
How you got the answer? You guys are just... All right, yes, mashallah, that is the answer. The first four-stroke engine, Adil, was, am I correct, like the brother said, Nicholas Otto?
Well done to the brother. I thought no one would get that answer. But yes, the most modern automotive engine operates on four-stroke. Today, most of the cars operate on four-stroke cycle or something. And in Europe, it was known as the Otto cycle because it was first brought into practical fruition by Nicholas August Otto in 1832, who was born in Holzhausen in Germany. So he was the guy who basically developed the first four-stroke engine, which we all drive in today. And you basically, through the help of Allah, made life easy for all of us so we can get to all places. So, mashallah, well done to the brother. He got both the answers right, so he can give him the prize, Musa.
Jazakallah, my brother. Well done to you. Congratulations. We're going to give you a lovely prize sponsored by...
Did he know the answer or did he guess the answer? I'd like to know that one.
Yeah, I think he hit a luck there.
He hit a luck there. Well done.
He hit a luck there. Okay, my brother, you want a lovely trip around the world. Are you happy? Around the world, starting from the Khamaz, going there after to... what's the place to fail? Khamaz, Mauritius, Timbuktu.
And all in a four-stroke engine.
Gee. All in a four-stroke engine. Okay, my brother, Jazakallah, well done. Just hold the line, and Brother Tufail's going to take on the details, okay?
Yeah, okay.
MashaAllah, take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. 7.39 p.m. Gee, other question coming through is, what are the causes, some causes of high oil consumption?
See, Mosab, as I explained earlier, like, when taking off the, you know, the dipstick and then the little oil cap and checking the car, so basically if you see the fume of your vapor coming through there, it's basically the blow-by from the rings. Or the bed, or the rings, or the oil rings in the piston, that will cause you very high oil consumption, and that is that the engine now is past its sell-by date, and a lot of wear will take place for the engine. That is the number one cause. The other cause is on the cylinder head, where you get the valve stem sealed, and the valve guides will also cause oil consumption to go through if those things are worn out. So the main oil consumption, and oil leaks must have also, we can write off oil leaks. If you have a severe oil leak, will also make your car oil consumption rise very high. So those are the three main culprits that will cause you high oil consumption.
Jazakumullah. Ali, the question coming through is, a brother wants to know, he wants to buy a 2009, doesn't say what car, but he's contemplating whether to buy a diesel or a petrol. He doesn't say what car. I think it's very important for him to say what car, but just an idea, Adil, your advice with regards to diesel, 2009, what's a better way, diesel or petrol?
Masab, you know, diesel has come a long way in our country. I don't know if you can remember about 10, 15 years ago, you talked about diesel. Nobody was interested in diesel.
Yeah.
People only were petrol heads. You know, we only had mostly petrol cars in our country. And people always thought of diesel cars as a noisy, clattering car that comes off the road and is always smoking and throwing out black smoke. And it sounds like a truck. And, you know, it has just put people off. Today, with the modern-day diesel engine, as I explained before on our programs, is the most efficient engine that you can buy. So basically, how I'll explain it to you is, out of 10, the efficiency of the engine, basically on a diesel engine, you're going to use 7, 6 or 7. On a petrol engine, you're only basically going to use 3 or 4 for the engine output of the engine. So basically, a diesel engine, you're making the most of the engine. And I believe that if you're using the car for long distance, so basically if you're doing more than 20, 30 kilometers a day, traveling to work and back, go for the diesel because you're going to get excellent fuel consumption in today's day and day. You'll get a consumption. This weekend I took a drive to Durban, Mosab, and I went in a GL. It's a huge SUV with a V6 diesel engine.
Okay.
And you won't believe, I went from here to Durban and I used just over, as when I came into Durban, I still had over half a tank left.
Oh, subhanAllah.
And it's a 100-liter tank, so basically I done 586 kilometers, and I drove back with that fuel in, and I came into, I just passed the Van Rien, the Villiers toll.
Yeah.
And just after the Villiers toll, I filled up again. So basically I done over 1,100 kilometers, which was excellent. The car fully loaded with all the passengers and all the goods and the bicycles.
Okay.
So you can see the efficiency of diesel engines and diesel fuel today in our country. So basically, if you want consumption and you want the economy from your engine, personally, I know Abdul won't agree with me, but I say go for the diesel.
Diesel, jazakumullah. All right, we have another caller. Assalamu alaikum. Okay, nobody there, inshallah. Call us back on 0118541548. Again, the SMS numbers are 48855 and 082-580-8070. We'll be waiting for the calls in the SMSs as well. All right, Adil, the question coming through. Okay, I'm just battling to get this SMS. Okay, the brother's question is, Assalamu alaikum. He says, just want to find out how is the Honda FRV. FRV, Adil, 1.8. The mileage is about 140 kilometers. What is the normal price that you would pay? Is it a good vehicle to invest in? Doesn't say what model. Most important question is, what model is it? But anyway, Adil, is it a good vehicle to invest in, the Honda 1.8?
The Honda FRV 1.8 G-Mosab is a discontinued motor vehicle, so you won't get it anymore. It won't be made anymore by Honda. It's totally discontinued. It's very popular amongst our people because the advantage of it is you can seat six people comfortably. So basically three in front and three in the back. and you have a considerable amount of boot space where you can load all your things in at the back, especially if you go in on holiday. My advice is rather take the manual one. The automatic ones, the gearboxes are a bit on a problematic side, and it is a bit costly to repair those gearboxes, but not really a train smash, so if you prefer automatic, it's not a problem. They range between normals up there. You can pick them from 60,000 men to about 90,000 men.
They're
normally going for, depending on the mileage and the condition of the car. Lovely car to buy, very comfortable, especially if you've got six in your family. And also the storage space and the little compartments they have all over the car, also excellent. Personally, one of my favorites also. I enjoy the car, I like the car. There are a couple of my friends out there who have this car, and they're also quite happy with it.
Jazakumullah, Adil. Wonderful. We've gone further, 7:44 p.m. Adil, the question coming through here is, this one states, what is the difference between a supercharger and a turbocharger? Adil?
Jim, what's up? In today's modern day engines, the turbochargers and the superchargers are basically fitted to basically every engine. If you look at the Mercedes, you'll see C200 compressor, you see the Golf TDI, and you know, now most of the modern petrol engines also being fitted with turbochargers. So basically, turbochargers is the way to go. So what they're doing is, to put a turbocharger in a car, you're going to get less fuel consumption and more power. So basically, in both cases, pressurized air is fed into the engine. So basically, in simple terms, you get pressurized air that's fed into the engines and to the exhaust manifold by means of a pump, which is known as a supercharger. When mechanically driven, okay, so if it's mechanically driven by a belt, it's a supercharger. And a turbocharger, when driven by the flow of the exhaust gases. So basically, the simple the answer to that question is, the supercharger is driven by a belt, and the turbocharger is driven by the exhaust gas. Both do the same job. One is mechanically driven, one is through the exhaust system, through the gas. And the fuel consumption and the power you're going to get from the turbochargers and superchargers is phenomenal. That's why in today's day and time, most of the motor manufacturers are introducing turbochargers and superchargers to their vehicles. More turbochargers, and you'll see gradually the superchargers have been discontinued because of the cumbersome way it's been operated, because of the belt and mechanically. This is used by exhaust gas, so basically using the power from the engine to drive the engine again. So brilliant idea. The only problem when it comes in is when those turbochargers fail. It can be a bit costly, but then the way they're making them now, also very robust. Earlier super turbochargers, I don't know if you noticed, suffered from a lag. You know, every time you try to take off, you feel a little lag and then the power coming.
Yeah.
It's all been rectified and been tuned and finally balanced with the air-fuel mixtures, and to avoid the poor fuel combustion and increased emissions. These things are all sorted out now, and now immediate response to the engine when you put your foot down.
Lovely. Audio question. The brother says he's got a 2014 Fortuner. Mashallah, everybody went to Durban coming back. I hope everybody had a lovely holiday. Adil, 2014 Fortuner. Brother says he drove to Durban, but what happened was the windscreen cracked badly. No apparent reason for this. Any reason, possibilities?
You see, because of the heat that we now experience, I think this will be a common problem, and I think most of the listeners will experience this, because we must remember with heat there's extra pressure. That's why it's advisable that, in a safety tip for all our listeners, that if you're leaving your car outside and leaving it in the sun, just leave your window about a couple of millimeters open.
If
any extra pressure build up in the engine, in the interior of the car, it'll always be released to those things. I've seen it happen now, and I witnessed it, that sometimes, on a hot day or even at work, the guy bangs the door and the whole back window pops out.
Yeah.
Because of the pressure that's in the car.
Gee.
Sometimes it can happen because of poor fitment of the windscreen or poor quality of sealant use. But I think what the brother expressed is called a pressure buildup, and he got a pressure crack. If nothing cracked the windscreen from outside, driving behind a truck through a stone and got cracked from inside, it's called a pressure crack, that because of the high pressure that was in the cabin. Has been caused because of the intense heat we have in recently.
Yeah.
So basically, the safety tip is, if you're parking your car outside and it's a long... First of all, if you're going to find a parking spot, try to park the car in the shade, especially on those hot days.
Yeah.
And my advice is, don't leave anybody in the car if it's out in the sun, like little children or your wife or whatever it is. I'll let them come out with you. Some modern-day cars, they have the rest functions where when you switch the car off, the car will still stay cool inside while you're outside. And the other thing is leave the window slightly open.
If the wife is traveling, lock her in the car and close the windows. I didn't go shopping for 2 hours. Gee. Anyway, just on the lighter side, gee. Anyway, I think the question coming through is, you know, when fuel prices are always or normally high, motorists normally get serious about looking for ways to improve on the fuel economy, Ariel, and also to try to reduce the fuel costs. Some ideas with regards to some products on the market which might improve the fuel economy, Ariel?
Well, there's so many of these products on the market. There's guys who are selling you emails that your car can save 30% of this, 30% of that. Insert this device into your engine. I've tried a few, and believe you me, I haven't been successful. I thought to myself that, you know what, let me be the guinea pig, let me try it out, and if it really works, I can come on to air on to Radio Islam and advise the listeners that I tried this product and it really works. But believe me, till today, I haven't come across that product that really works. Maybe one of the listeners out there, he came across that product or she came across that product and they can advise us if it really works. But till today, with all the additives and all those things, I haven't come across that product. I think the main reason for good fuel consumption is the way you drive the car and how we explain to the listeners in the past how to drive, and when not to drive, and when not to drive.
JazakAllah. Arjun, the question coming through is a brother says he's got a faulty coolant sensor. It's bad, and he wants some advice. What's the easiest way, and what will it cost? A faulty coolant sensor. It's a Mercedes-Benz.
Jim, also, we spoke about the sensors last week, how many sensors we have in a vehicle, and the coolant sensor is one of the main sensors that you can get into the vehicle. The coolant sensor sits in the reservoir bottle or some of them on the radiator, which will determine the amount of water or coolant that is in the radiator. The sensor is not expensive. I think about 100 or 200 rand the sensor will cost you. But there's twofold to the sensor. One is just a pickup sensor. So basically the water reservoir bottle on the Mercedes has a magnetic effect on the bottle. So when the water is filled up, it's got a little magnet in it which pushes the magnet up and goes to the sensor which causes a magnetic field and sends a signal back to the instrument cluster to tell you that the water level is all right. A lot of people are mistaken when they think it's a sensor and they replace the sensor and they find that it got the same problem. The main thing is to check if it's not the reservoir bottle. 99% of the time the sensor is good, but the reservoir bottle is faulty.
Okay, JazakAllah. Adil, the question is, a brother says he's got a Mercedes-Benz as well. When it comes to a stop straight, the engine just stops. He's got to re-crank it, start it again. It happens all the time.
Jim, also, the modern-day Mercedes.
Yeah.
There is a standard function on this car. So basically, they call it the stop-start function. So when you come to the stop street and you put your foot on the brake, the car switches off for the emission levels and to save your fuel consumption. So if he has a modern-day car, I think he'll know that there is a common, that is a normal standard feature. So basically, you put your foot on the brake, the car switches off. You release your foot, the car starts itself and moves again.
Is it?
So they call it the stop-start, the stop-go feature, right? The other one he's talking, what can be wrong with his car is, when coming to stop, the car cuts out and he has to start it again. That means his idle switch or the idle position sensor is not recognizing that the car is idling. So basically when he releases his foot from the accelerator, it goes past the idle switch contact and cuts the car out because it doesn't get signal that the car now has to idle. So, and most of the time the idle speed sensor is located on the throttle actuator, which is built in the throttle actuator. So basically the brother should check his throttle actuator. And most of the time, there is a culprit, and that is faulty, and you should either service it or replace it.
Okay, dear. Allah Jazakallah, my brother, for the lovely program. Really, I learned a great deal. Allah Pak, the water in abundance.
Ameen, sir.
And we talk again next week, inshallah. Allah Baling Adil.
And to all our listeners, inshallah, if they have any questions or queries regarding the motoring of their motor cars, we can assist you.
Allah, just one last question. MashaAllah, yesterday I was really taken aback. Just to tell our listeners, an uncle of mine had a Mercedes-Benz C180, the old ones. And, you know, the doors couldn't lock. One mechanic said there's some pressure along the line. With the result, the doors are not opening. And we suggested, let's ask Adil for his mashwara. We took the car there, mashallah. Within a minute, Adil sorted the problem out. Adil, you want to tell us how you did it?
Alhamdulillah, it's all from Allah. And all our experience that we have on these motor vehicles, all the many years that we hard and toiled and in the hot sun and all in the hot workshops we learned and carried on fixing these vehicles. Jim, also, the main thing is on the system Molana's uncle had is the IFZ system, which normally comes on the older Mercedes's. That means from the year 1996 to 1998, where the key has to be synchronized. So basically, if you have a red and green light on your interior mirror of your vehicle. That means you have the IFZ system. So basically what happens is, also another important thing to for our listeners to practice upon is when having your electronic key or even your hotel room card or your banking card or even your parking ticket,
okay,
don't put it next to your mobile phone. So basically if you have your mobile phone in the one pocket, put your parking ticket, your hotel room key, even your car key in the other pocket. Because the mobile phone with so much of this radiation and the magnetic field that goes from the relevant destroys the coding of the... You see, sometimes you, if you got your mobile phone with your hotel room key, and you a couple hours out, you come back to your hotel room, the key don't work. Because it took away the frequency from the key. You have to go back downstairs, recode the key, and you come back up. Same with your parking ticket. If you keep your parking ticket with your mobile phone, you come back to insert the parking ticket, it doesn't read the ticket. Same with your motor vehicle key. It loses the synchronization. So basically, the easy way to do it, I'll teach the listeners on the air. You hold the key in your hand, and towards the rear view mirror where the green light and the red light is, you depress the button twice on the remote, and within 10 seconds you put the ignition on in your vehicle. After you do that, the green light will flash on the mirror, and there your key is synchronized, and you can lock and unlock the car and start your vehicle.
It's fun a lot. It's really amazing, Adil.
Alhamdulillah.
Jazakallah, my brother. Again, take care. Inshallah, we talk tomorrow.
Amin, inshallah.
Jazakallah. Assalamu alaikum. 7:56 p.m. That was Adil Mia on the Revitav Car program. Inshallah, join us next week, same time, same place. We conclude the program. From myself, Muhammad Kara, have a lovely weekend. Fi amanillah, request for du'as. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.